RadioInfluence.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a somewhat delayed Saturday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Summer Breeze, Val. Summer Breeze.
I like that. It sounds like a nice perfume.
It actually sounds like it would be a really nice light cocktail.
Yeah.
Like one of those. You ever have a 007?
No. What is that?
007s are real. I'm going to get this wrong because they've only been fed to me by friends of mine. But I believe that it's Stolio and a little bit of ginger. What the hell is it actually? Damn it. I don't know. But it's one of those very light cocktails that you can have by a poolside, and you can have about, you know, three or four of them without even knowing. You're just sipping and they're just refreshing. And then all of a sudden you can't feel your legs.
Wow. That's my kind of drink.
Yes.
That is my kind of drink.
Oh, it smells great right today. I'm doing this from home now because, of course, Tracy was so nice as to buy me for my birthday this Samson USB microphone that I can now plug in and work on from home. And I have the window open next to me. This beautiful breeze is coming in. And I just worked out and the sun is out. And at 3:30, I have to go throw batting practice for the kids. It's going to be great.
Yeah, so just knowing, guys, that microphone that I got Frank for his birthday was the cause, it seems, of all of the problems we had yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. As soon as that microphone goes in and I try to run any sort of anything, my computer just said, you know what? Screw you. You're not having nice sound today. And take a hike, Tracy. Take a hike.
Oh, you mean it was screwing up things for you on your end?
Yeah, that's what was causing the problem is that like every time I would try to like Frank would come in slow motion like this. That's how I would hear him. Like a slow motion Frank.
That's me after about seven
007s, right? Anyway, long story short, that's why we couldn't record the podcast on Friday yesterday. But yesterday was so awesome. I got to tell you, I mean, I had such an amazing time doing what we were doing yesterday, filming this educational series of videos for Walk Away. And
I can't wait to see what comes of it.
It was great. It was really great. I'm excited to see it too finished. And the people we were working for were just like the consummate professionals. It was the professional set. It was really cool. It was really, they're really doing some amazing stuff. And you know, of course it was started with the whole incident with Brandon at the airport. You saw?
Yeah. No, but I heard.
Yeah, so this girl, like, apparently, you know, started calling him and the president a racist for wearing his MAGA cap, and he started recording her, and she tried to smack the phone out of his hand and proceeded to run to TSA and say she was a model and don't record me and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, lemons out of lemonade. We tried to do something nice, but it didn't work out.
Lemonade out of lemons, you mean?
Yes.
That's like you're reverse engineering the lemonade. What is this, Brooklyn? You know, it's like the deconstructed macaroni in Brooklyn. You ever see how the hipsters do that?
I don't even know if I want to know.
Well, what, you know, because obviously everybody has to reinvent the wheel and show you how awesome, you know, we have great idea. So you go to certain places in Brooklyn, at least this was a thing about 3 or 4 years ago, and you can have deconstructed meals where instead of having spaghetti and meatballs, you're getting a pile of spaghetti in one bowl. You get your sauce in the other. You get, you know, whatever the hell it over here. But you should see some of these other things that they deconstruct, like tiramisu.
Why would you do that?
I don't know, because people are...
What's the point then? You're just not even baking the thing. Why don't you just throw the raw ingredients in and give someone a burner and an oven? I mean,
why do they call spirit cooking performance art, Tracy? I don't know. Everybody's nuts. Everything's an art form now. Just eat the damn spaghetti.
Like, here's your sauce. Here's your spaghetti. I mean, what are you paying the chef for at that point?
I don't know. You want some tiramisu, and they bring out a small platter of lady fingers and a little bit of this. Like, come on, just stack this shit for me. Stack it.
I'm here because I don't want to cook this damn thing. God. And it's probably more expensive.
What about deconstructed cheese? Are they going to walk the cow out for you? I don't know.
Well, anyway, in any case, Frank was very flexible with his very busy Saturday. So if there may be a chance that he has to bow out at some point in the middle of the show. And so if he says bye, I'll take over from there and try and be this solo, the solo pilot. But we'll see how it goes. So we really wanted to get the show out today, even though we have another one Monday morning. So we really wanted to get it out because we feel like there's a lot to talk about specifically surrounding Julian Assange, right?
Yes.
So we're going to motor through Julian Assange as best as we can. That sounds really bad.
Let's motor him. Let's motorboat him.
Motorboat Assange. And once we're done with that, we'll probably just call it a show, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we've been talking about Assange for a very long time on this show, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And Frank, you did a lot of, kind of research into the whole Seth Rich aspect of this whole thing, kind of refreshing yourself again, because it's such a complicated story. It's not cut and dry. So Assange gets indicted the other day and he's arrested and dragged out of the embassy without his feet touching the floor, holding a copy of a book. What book was that again?
Gore Vidal's book about the national security state and pretty much Gore Vidal just in general had a lot of
The summer breeze has gotten you.
Summer breeze. The Gore Vidal talked a lot about how national security state has just created this ridiculous surveillance trap for all people that were not really free because of it. And he was a big proponent of letting people know just what is being done in their name, behind their back, without any kind of accountability. He also had some other, he was one of those people back in the 1970s talking about how the world is we're reaching a point of overpopulation and we need to make sure that everybody is practicing birth control. So there's other things there. But as far as military industrial complex, spy surveillance state stuff, I'm right there with him. And it's just weird that Julian Assange was allowed, even though there was some kind of a fight or a struggle that took place on the inside, people were saying he was allowed to carry out a piece of property like that and display it the whole way while he's literally like being lifted off the ground. I don't get it.
Listen, that wasn't, I mean, in my opinion, and a lot of this is going to be our opinions because this is such a charged topic right now, but I think that was a message to someone, not the everyday man, but someone else.
Yeah.
I really do. So,
I was looking at this here too. There was somebody in the UK, and I forgot. I should have sent you the clip so you can play it. But there was somebody, maybe an MP or somebody over there in the UK, that was really going back and reminding everybody what Julian Assange, people like him, really showed us. And she brought up, I should have found out her name, but I saved it so I can cue it up on my show next week at some point. But she showed the drone footage from 2007. Just one instance out of many where 18 civilians are killed in a drone strike. That was these types of things that were going on, exposing torture, exposing whatever the hell it is. And I understand that protocols, and I understand that crimes, from a legal perspective, crimes are being committed by taking this stuff out. I understand that by exposing sources and methods, we have assets in the field that are compromised in some kind of a way. We know how that can pay, how that can come back around to haunt you. Just look at how all of our assets in China were being destroyed. And killed sometimes in plain daylight to send messages while our most sensitive information was being compromised by people with servers. And, there's a lot of things happening that, it makes those who are a little bit more establishment say there's no way in hell we can have this kind of stuff going on. There should be proper ways to whistleblow on illegal activity. But on the other hand, I don't know. I don't think anybody in our founding generation would like any, not so much that even abuses happened and secrecy and secret little cliques were formed within this kind of surveillance and this intelligence community mob that has formed. I think that the intelligence community even existing in the first place would call a lot of bad attention and shock and outrage to those who were, at first talking about liberty and what the hell citizen government would look like. So this, I know that there's always just going to be fundamental arguments about Assange that's going to split us all down the middle in some way. But I stand by free journalism. I stand by getting information out there. I don't care how much it hurts sometimes. It just has to happen. So it's interesting where this is going, and it's interesting the props he was carrying and everything that is being thrown out there right now.
Yeah, it is. And you're right about it, the polarization of this from people who have served in the military standpoint to people that are everyday citizen standpoint to people that are mad about, you know, one is something that they released hurting their side. All that whole, we could have literally a 2-hour long show, if not more, debating these things.
Nobody was calling him a political hack when he was exposing George Bush,
right.
when he was making problems for Sarah Palin. Nobody was saying boo about that. But now, you know.
Yeah, now it's a big deal. So, I found the indictment. I read it quickly because I was on the plane. And I tweeted out and I said, if this is true. So the indictment basically says that he was chatting in a secure chat app with Chelsea Manning. And he was asked by Chelsea Manning if he would be able to crack a password that would allow Manning to be able to access different information. And he took the password, tried to crack it, and it ultimately never ended up happening. But my point at that time was, now you're no longer a journalist. Now you're actively attempting to penetrate the U.S. government at the highest level by decrypting a password that is used to secure information. Now you're not the reporter anymore. Now you're an active participant in a conspiracy.
Yeah.
And that, to me, really undermined WikiLeaks as a whole, because there's a difference between being a hacker group and claiming First Amendment rights to publish whistleblower claims that are going, you know, that are going unannounced or whatever. Whatever, you know? So I was struggling with that, and I posted very quickly, and it's something I emotionally posted. And I said at the time, I'm really sorry that I did this, because I feel like there's so much fluid here that we really need to wait before we talk. And sure enough, I found the chat logs later on that day in the evening. I found the chat logs at like 11:30 at night. And I read through them, went to sleep, slept on it, and posted them in the morning. Now, these chat logs that the United States government is referencing were in a court-accepted exhibit, a prosecutor's exhibit, from Manning's case in 2010. So the government has had this, and not only that, but it is weak. It is a weak charge. I mean, weak. He says that he said, oh, I'm going to give it to so-and-so to try, like another department within WikiLeaks. But there's no indication that he ever did it. And there's no indication that they actually weren't successful. So it was he just like shirking off Manning, saying he was going to do it to keep Manning talking? You know, what was the, was it just like kind of a farce, or was it actually something that was done? In either case, to be able to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt to get a conviction in court, when they've, and not only that, but they've had this information for 9 years, and this indictment was drawn up last year. To me, it was just like, why on this? Nothing to do with Russia, of course. None of that stuff. That was their charge. It was. Did you read that stuff? You might not have had a chance to yet.
I didn't read the log, but that's what I was seeing. You know, when I watched what they were saying that he was going to be, he could be rung up on, and what kind of prison time it carried. The Daily Mail was the first article I read on what was going on here, and in the headline they say he faces decades, and then in the body of the text. Of the body of the article, they say that whatever he was doing, whatever he's being brought up on and extradited for, carries like a maximum penalty of 5 years. And I'm, you know, there, so the disparity between that and, you know, the thing there is, like you said, they're saying that he was actually a part of the procuring of the information and was helping somebody actually commit the crime. And I, at that point, I was like, you know, I have never seen or heard anything that was definitive about this, but now it's being referenced. And I don't know if it's just one of those things where it's being reported in a certain way, or something that was very vague and ambiguous is now being framed in a very definitive way to build up a case in the public eye, so everybody goes around thinking that he was a clear culprit in actually extracting the information instead of just being the publisher. I don't know, because all of the public relation games that are being put out there. I mean, we just went through an entire series of a string of crimes where you have the international intelligence communities and intelligence assets who are working hand in hand with the media to actually legitimize the things that they were doing, or try to legitimize the things that they wanted to do. So now I'm hearing all this information about Julian Assange and what he was doing with Bradley Manning that I never heard before. But at the same time, if it's true, can you really dispute that he is in the wrong? So it seems like there's more mind games being played here. And even in these articles that are being written, they bounce between him possibly facing decades and him actually facing just 5 years or nothing. Now, with that being said, the person who is undisputably responsible for taking classified information out of a place that it should not have been, and mishandling information like this and endangering all those assets in the field and whatever, Bradley Manning, he was given 35 years in jail, commuted after 7. So he essentially spent the same 7 years that Assange did in captivity.
Yep.
And they're both out after the same 7 years were served on their ends. And now we're talking about decades more for Assange when Bradley was given 35 and was commuted after 7. And even the commutation, you can say that 35 was even overkill for what he was given. But, you know, this is – nothing makes sense. The consistency is not there for me.
Yeah, and so let's start to explore, Frank, all the different things that it could be. And let's make a disclaimer. This is speculation, theories, hypothesis here, and just giving you some facts that are facts, that we know are facts, that then you can use and go back and put together yourself and try and come up with some kind of a story. And we're not going to know any of this until we get a little further along. I mean, there's no way to know. But I think the timing of all of this is just striking, okay? Because we just had the Attorney General of the United States of America come out and say that, yes, there was spying on the Trump campaign. Yes, we need to look into it. Now, we know that this has been ongoing. We've talked about this several times. I think the consensus out there, for the most part, is that people know there were investigations going on for a really long time here. And that plays in because the Mueller report comes out, you know, we know Mueller never talked to Assange, at least we think we know that. I mean, we haven't seen the documents yet, but basically all of a sudden now, like after everything seems to be coming to the forefront, bubbling up to the surface, we have an extradition request for Julian Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy. So I started thinking back to the John Solomon reporting from just a year or so ago, where John Solomon had put that article out about the deal that was going on between Assange, Waldman, and James Comey and Bruce Orr about immunity for Assange, so he would come to the United States, give the United States the ways to close up the holes in their infrastructure to stop these leaks from happening, and also not publish the Vault 7 information, but make sure that he worked with people to make sure he didn't put out anything classified that could hurt anyone or endanger anybody, or he could redact stuff. So, right. So I'm gonna just pull up that article really quickly. It's called "How Comey Intervened to Kill WikiLeaks Immunity Deal," and hey, it's Buck Sexton. I have an automatic ad playing, of course. One of the more devastating intelligence leaks in American history has been the unmasking of the CIA's arsenal of cyber warfare weapons last year. Some of the characters are household names: Comey, Warner, and Bruce Orr. Julian Assange, grandmaster of WikiLeaks, and American attorney Adam Waldman. That was the guy who also worked with Warner and Christopher Steele. Each played a role in the early days of the Trump administration to try to get Assange to agree to risk mitigation, essentially limiting some of the classified CIA information he might release in the future. And so that effort resulted in the drafting of a limited immunity deal that might have freed WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange from the embassy where he'd been exiled for years.
The problem came in when Assange said, I want to give you the forensic information to prove it wasn't Russia that hacked into the DNC and the and Podesta's emails. And what happened? The entire deal falls apart. Comey pulls the plug. Bruce Orr is involved here. They sacrificed knowing the truth about where that information came from for the CIA's full cache of data being published online. Think about the severity of that.
Listen, this is the biggest thing, the hold up for me on everything. Not only do you have this guy hold up in this embassy for 7 years and nothing is being done about him, then all of a sudden we have Donald Trump. We have the 3 years or 2.5 years of the Russia bullshit. You have the Mueller investigation. Finally, it wraps up when it feels like it's going to go on forever. There's no collusion. And now we have Barr talking about spying, and we're going to see if it was, you know, if it was legitimate or not, whatever. And while all of this is going on, all of these different things are running parallel. The Nexium trials, so many things are running parallel to each other. Mm-hmm. And then you have this that happens. All of a sudden, Julian Assange, first of all, Ecuador, saying that he was being impolite to guards and he was smearing feces on the walls. And he all these things right now was the final straw. Right now at this point is the final straw. And what I'm looking at here is people say, well, this is the deep state fighting back. They got Assange. Well, but
they could have
just said, it could have been they could have had him the whole time. But like you just said right there, Tracy, as you're going back to John Solomon's reporting, is that the deep state was working in earnest to make sure he stayed out of the country because of how dangerous the information he has is.
Yep.
Why the hell would it now be in their advantage when they are at their weakest and most exposed to bring this guy into the country now?
It wouldn't. I mean, you have to just think like sort of logically about this, because like, listen, there's a contingency of Assange supporters who are angry at people who are saying this, what we're saying right now, that the United States is going to somehow make a deal with Julian Assange that they can get the truth of the Russia investigation out to the public. And the fact that the entire predicate crime or the entire predication for this entire saga was that Russia hacked. And remember, Barr affirmed what was in Mueller's report, specifically in his summary letter. You have to remember that. And also remember, Barr specifically chose his DAG to be Terwilliger. Terwilliger's son is the one running this case. Just think about all this. It's just so many coincidences, right? Like in a presidential interview or history interview, Barr stressed in no uncertain terms that it was so important that you choose your own deputy attorney general, because in his words, they have your balls in their hand. And I don't want an enemy having my balls in their hand. That's what he said, like straight up. So he chooses Zachary Terwilliger, or George Terwilliger, actually, served as his deputy attorney general. I find that all of a sudden, his son, Terwilliger's son, is the U.S. attorney in Virginia who's handling the Assange case. It's just weird. I'm sorry. Anyway, put that all aside. He just came out and reaffirmed for everybody that, like, Mueller said that Russians, that the 12 GRU people that they indicted and all the nonsense with Russia, and we were so frustrated about it, them reaffirming that this was what it was. And now all of a sudden we have WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange arrested in London with an extradition request to come to the United States. And
it's, I know.
I mean, people are, but the activists that have been supporting Assange for so long are mad that people here are speculating this way, because they feel like it takes the focus off of the danger that Assange could be in and places it into he's a good guy who's flipped and he's going to help the United States. And you know what? Like, I feel like that pedestal needs to be stepped off of just a little bit, because regardless of what anybody's saying, the microscope that is on this right now is so huge that if there is something that goes wrong or some indication that that's not the case, everybody's going to know about it immediately.
Yeah.
So don't look a gift horse in the mouth and start, you know, pushing everyone away just because you don't agree with their assessment of what's going on here. You have an army of people who will relish in Assange being the biggest hero to ever walk the face of the earth, should this be the reason that he's coming here. And because of that, they're staring at this case. And the government knows that, too. So do you think that when Assange gets here, that he might get a bath and a shower and, like, you know, some really good food and to be able to read whatever books he wants and maybe a lawyer to represent him without having to worry? You know what I mean? Like, he's
It'll
coming.
Be interesting to see what kind of counsel he's given.
And
It'll
who
be interesting
it is.
To see.
And
yeah,
who it
who's,
is.
Who that that's going to be the number one thing there, too, as far as his defense and the discovery process and where this is all going to lead. I don't. It can go any way. I don't know. All I know is that it's not cut and dry, no matter what way you put it. And I know what I hope happens. But listen, I'm not a journalist. I'm not a soothsayer. So I don't know what the hell's going on here. What I will say though is that for him to be brought in here and for him to be crucified, if that's what people think that this really is, that it's the deep state fighting back and they're going to win this one, for him to be brought in here under the pretext of the Manning situation, after it is deader than a dead horse, it's the horse skeleton at this point. I really don't know. I think that is a squeaky clean pretext to just get him into the country under.
Agreed. And, you know, a lot of people are saying more charges to come, more charges to come. Maybe they have something else that we don't know about and we're wrong by suspecting that he could, or maybe they have something else and they're going to use that as leverage to get him to provide the forensic evidence. But I got to say, he's been screaming that this was not Russia since day one. And Hannity's been saying that when he interviews him for a year, if not more. And
well, think about the firewall aspect of the Mueller probe and Russia and all that stuff. Now, for you, people like you, myself, a lot of our friends and a lot of people out there that listen and we interact with every day have been screaming from the beginning. Why are we messing around with the made up fantasy minutia of this story when you're not talking to the people at the base of the pyramid at the beginning, the origin point of the story? Why is everybody ignoring or deliberately trying to avoid Julian Assange throughout the entire investigation of Russia and Mueller and Trump? So my question to you here is, if that has been the play from the beginning, it seems to me that perhaps Team Trump and everybody in that circle thought that if you're game planning here and you know what Democrats are going to do, you know that from the very beginning they've been trying to bait Trump into falling into some kind of obstruction trap. Every couple of weeks, the news cycle turns back to somebody saying he better not fire Mueller. Is Trump going to fire Mueller? He keeps saying, I'm not going to fire him. But they kept trying. You can see the bait. They were trying to get him to do something to obstruct. I would have to imagine at this point that they probably knew that they were going to be able to get past the Mueller investigation without having to muddy the waters with anybody as controversial as Assange. And now that we're actually out of the way, now in comes a point where you can say that any kind of mention of Assange, even talking about Mueller after the fact, that can't be obstruction. It's already over.
Yeah. And think about it like this. Who were the people, like you said, who were the people that were trying to stop him and ignoring what he was saying?
The deep state.
The deep state. It was Mueller, it was Comey, it was Orr, it was all
Warner.
These people. Warner, exactly. And Warner is the snakiest of them all. Who's the people that all of a sudden brought him here? The good guys. And like I said, a year this indictment has been there, just sitting there waiting. A year. So guess who was the attorney general when the indictment was drafted?
Who?
Sessions.
See, I'm telling you. And listen, here's another thing that comes back around. I know so few people try to give Jeff Sessions his due. And I know just from friends of mine who are inside the Beltway over there.
He's a good guy.
That he's a good guy, but that when he recused himself from the Russia thing, he did what he thought was right and that Trump was really upset about it. That it wasn't a strategic play that Trump was on board for, that there was real tension that formed and stuck around between Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump on the recusal.
Yep.
But look, once again, talking about making sure that this process was squeaky clean.
Yeah.
You got. I keep thinking. You know what? Maybe it gave the media some fodder, but I think that Jeff Sessions saved Donald Trump a world of headaches that to add on to all the headaches that they already gave him.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, you got to think about that. Like, people yell at him for recusing, and you think about it, he did the right thing by recusing. I've said that too. It, you know, we were pissed about it because then you've got to, you know. We don't know what's going on with Rod Rosenstein. I still don't know what his deal is. I'm not sure what the hell that man is. If he's a good guy, if he's a bad guy, every other day it seems to change. I don't know. And you think about, too, this whole thing that's going on now with the fact that we're learning through Comey memos that really the only two people on God's green earth that knew about the special counsel were Comey and Rosenstein. So, like, it's just a very tangled web. But you're right. If Jeff Sessions would have stayed involved, it probably would have been a shit show. It really probably would have.
At this point, yeah, you can see why the crops needed to be rotated right after the midterms. Yeah. And once again, I thought that was really interesting that the remote viewing blogs that I keep track of, they were all saying the same thing, that Sessions is gone after the midterm. It was the next day.
Yeah, it was. I know. And I remember you saying that on the show, actually.
So when the psychics when the psychics say it and it happens, watch out.
Listen, they're not psychics. That's first of all. Because you're right. They are psychics. Never mind.
They are enhanced. Their sensory perceptions are enhanced, I should say.
But everybody can remote view.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone can do it if they train. And it's actually, people thought that it was all conspiracy theory nonsense. And like a year and a half, 2 years ago, I did a video all about the declassified docs in the CIA reading room about remote viewing and how they used it. Uh-huh. So everyone can kiss my A double crooked letter.
Kiss the ass. Just kiss the ass.
While the breeze is blowing in the summer. So there's that aspect of it. And then if you want, let's spend just a couple minutes going over the controversy of the Rod Wheeler. What's his name?
Seth Rich.
No, not. I remembered that. The guy, the reporter, Cy Hirsch. That whole thing there. Now, people, again, are 50-50 on this. Like, oh, Seth Rich was mugged. How dare you say anything else? You conspiracy theorist crazy. Or it was Seth Rich. He was mugged and they didn't take anything. They still haven't opened up his files for people to see him. They said, you know, this case was consumed people for years.
But wait a second. The files, I remember this was a couple of months ago. It was before 2018 ended. We were taking a look at, I forget who the hell even put the FOIA request in, but there was a Freedom of Information request on all of the whatever was going on with Seth Rich. And I remember it bounced back and it was at least getting circulated around the circles of people like us. That request bounced back as not being able to be accessed for national security reasons.
Yep, you're right. Yeah, they said no. And, you know, you got to remember Donna Brazile, what she put in her book, the fact that she said she was petrified. She hid in her office with the curtains closed. Listen, people. You know, you can be non-conspiratorial all you want, but sometimes there's so much crap that lines up. And there are teams of people that did research on this and went and interviewed people and had, you know, had whistleblowers come forward and all kinds of stuff. There were lawsuits filed on major scales, like where Seth's brother was filing lawsuits. You had, you know, award-winning investigative journalists coming out and saying that the laptop had this stuff on it and it was provable. And you have WikiLeaks coming out and basically saying, without saying, that Seth Rich was their source for this information.
Well, now, when you go out there and you say, hey, any information that can lead to some kind of conclusion as to what happened to Seth Rich, and you put a $10,000 to $20,000 price tag on it, and then you go on and on in a very not so veiled way about needing to put some attention into protecting sources and not, letting people feel comfortable of exposing things that they catch. I mean, you put the puzzle pieces together for yourself. What the hell are they saying there?
Yeah, but not only that, you know, it was funny, Kyle, you know Kyle on Twitter. You've talked to him on your show, John.
Yeah,
Miller.
No, I saw he has an alternative theory about it. I saw it. And you know what? You can arrange the pieces however you want, and sometimes it'll work out. It doesn't make this any.
or it's definitive. It doesn't. But it was interesting because I retweeted that because I thought it was interesting. It was an interesting perspective. Not that I believed it. I just thought, wow, look at this. You know, there's another side of the coin. You know how, I just have to make a point of this. It was like relentless. Like people were like, how dare you? You know, how could you say that this was? And I'm like, look, guys, you got to open your minds a little bit. If people are afraid to bring forth alternate theories of how things may have gone, we'll never get anywhere. You know, the confirmation bias needs to go a little bit on this side of the fence here. It really does. But it was interesting to see that. But with all that being said, I mean, the Seth Rich thing, just they were so close. They were so close to being able, like even Hannity was talking about it and stopped. And Hannity has been involved in this whole thing from the get. So will we get justice for Seth Rich? Is that what's going to come out of this?
I don't know. All I know, you know what? What if D.C. is not exactly a very safe place to live by any way. I'm just talking just in general. So thinking about him being part of a conspiracy and they're shutting him up or whatever the hell it is, or they're, let's say that some kind of powerful political organization is tying up loose ends and Seth Rich, it becomes pretty much a target for assassination. That could be so. It could also just be awful timing. I mean, where he gets killed around the time that he set up a Dropbox.
Yeah.
And I mean, you were talking about Seymour Hersh a little bit there. This guy, you should, if anybody out there, if you want to watch this, I don't know if Tracy can put it into the show notes, but I have a 6-minute clip of Seymour Hersh talking about this candidly that is at the top of the Interesting Shite playlist on my Quite Frankly channel. And if you want to watch that, that's really interesting. He goes into depth about how it's, first of all, he puts this all on John Brennan's shoulders in the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, this is a John Brennan trick. This is over and over again. These are people that are trying to find a way to keep their jobs and to keep the order that they built up there within that intelligence community in place because they know what a Donald Trump presidency means. They know what that means when he comes in with somebody like Michael Flynn that was already looking to really revamp the way things are done, especially foreign policy wise, how everything is worked out there. So there are professional reasons to try to stop and destroy Donald Trump. There are other things out there too. And then, of course, the whole Seth Rich thing is really interesting what he says about it. Really interesting.
Yeah. Bill Binney. Well, not only Bill Binney, but, you know, the Guccifer 2 thing comes in here, too. And I've done a lot of work on Seth Rich. I've done a lot of work on Guccifer 2, a lot of work on Guccifer 2. Guccifer 2 and the fact that in the middle of the Hillary Clinton email investigation, Dana Bonte goes and extracts Guccifer 1, the real Guccifer, the first Guccifer, the one who was responsible for figuring out that Hillary Clinton even had a personal email server, and they bring him here to the United States while he's serving a jail sentence in Romania. They interview him. The FBI releases the interview documents in a FOIA, in a dump, you know, on the FOIA, on the reading room. And inside, we learn that they were talking to him about all these things that were going on and how he knew about Hillary Clinton's email. He changes his story. And then they come to a plea agreement with him and they ship him back to Romania. And then all of a sudden, like a little bit later, Guccifer 2 pops up, like from Romania with like all the same kind of characteristics as Guccifer 1. And it's just weird. Everybody at the time remarked how weird it was that they were taking him over here to question him here when he was in jail in Romania and then sending him back there. So the actual Guccifer, the original Guccifer, Guccifer, however you want to say it, you understand what I'm saying or am I being too complicated?
No. I mean, you're adding a lot of all of the other layers to the onion that really make all of this ever more important to at least inquire into it. I don't see how it's really dishonoring anybody's memory to say that this is a very obvious stone that needs to be upturned to see what's going on there. Nobody's saying that that Seth Rich was a political operative for the right or anything like that. I mean, there's been people saying that his exposure to what he saw on the the back Sanders. End of things, because he was a Bernie Sanders fan and he was going to vote for Bernie Sanders, and he saw that Sanders did not have a chance at the primary, the nomination, because the primary was rigged. That there's that going on. There's concern there. Now, you know, right there, is it convenient that he wants to expose that? Sure. I mean, it's not convenient that he wanted a communist to grab the nomination for the DNC, but still, it's just one thing. And it's because of that. It's because of that DNC leak that they had to come up with, and they stuck by Russia did it.
Yep.
They had to stuck by it. Well, hey.
You mentioned Binney, which is why I went into the whole Dana Bonte thing. And the reason why I did that was because, you know, there was a guy that came out named With Integrity who worked with another person to do the forensic work on this from the very beginning. It was G2 Force was the name of the website, and I'll link it in the show notes for everybody. But he went through, I had done a video on Seth Rich, kind of like a everything you need to know about Seth Rich in 30 minutes. And he commented and emailed and got in touch with me to show me the work that had been done. And I saw it and I was like, oh my gosh, he was one of the first people to figure out that it was impossible for this to have been a leak. Looking at the metadata, he was the one who discovered the Warren Flood registered copy of Office, which ended up just being, you know, a coincidence. He was the one who did all that. And then William Binney came out with VIPs and wrote all these letters to the government and said, listen, guys, this was not like a data transfer from overseas. There's no way. It had to have been locally that this was done. And another interesting aspect of this, really quickly, is Dana Rohrabacher. I don't know if you guys remember that Dana Rohrabacher went over to the UK and met with Assange. Right. And interning for Dana Rohrabacher for years was Eric Prince. And David Rohrabacher came back and met with and went on Hannity and said, you know, it wasn't Russia. We want to meet with the president to give him this information. We want to make sure he gets it. That was before the staff changes happened, and he had his own chief of staff and all that stuff. And Rohrabacher was never able to get a meeting with President Trump. So what did Rohrabacher do? He went to Rand Paul and he told Rand Paul all about this information. Not even 10 days later, what happened? Maybe a coincidence, but Rand Paul is attacked on his front lawn and beaten to a bloody oblivion, and his lungs are damaged, ribs are broken, all kinds of stuff. And now we have Rand Paul. What is Rand Paul saying publicly? Assange deserves a pardon.
That's great. That's so good.
So we know Rand Paul has the ear of President Trump. They meet frequently. So there's all these little facets here to this story. And not only that, I had a cough. I'm sorry.
You should have just coughed. I sneezed.
Yeah, but my coughing in the microphone, people would have lost it. No. Not only that, but who is involved up to their eyeballs in all of the kind of like underhanded dealings and stuff with the Seth Rich investigation and the whistleblowers? A man who anytime he puts his paws on something, turns it to a pile of ash. Jack Berkman.
Oh, I remember this name.
Jack Berkman did the press conference with Wall recently about Mueller having like whatever sexual assault allegations against him, and his fly was open the whole time. Mm. You know, every time Jack Berkman gets involved, he also got involved with Matt Couch's team when they were bringing the whistleblower forward about Rod Rosenstein, and he ruined that entire thing too. So, and he also was attacked. He was, you know, Jack Berkman is also connected to Rick Gates, who's under indictment by Mueller right now. I've done videos and countless pieces on all this stuff over the past year and a half, 2 years. So this is a very tangled web of information. But Berkman ran this thing with this local college to try and figure out how Seth Rich was murdered. And he released a study that it was a serial killer. I can't. I just... Then he said he got the OIG report in a parking garage. He went to meet with someone who was going to give him the OIG report on the mid-year exam before it was finished, and he got shot.
See, when, like I said, when it comes to Seth Rich, whatever the circumstances around his murder is, he was murdered. It was tragic. Whether or not it was put to one place or the other, whoever was responsible for it does not take away from the real important questions that need to be answered about Seth Rich's involvement with whistleblowing on his own party. Because that's exactly what this is. Seth Rich, if this really turns out to be what it is, and Rod Wheeler was right there and he was making really bold statements at first, and then all of a sudden everybody felt, it seemed like everybody was backing off. Nobody wanted to talk about anything. The DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, was very protective of the servers. They wanted the FBI nowhere near them. A lot of threats were being thrown around that time to make sure that they controlled the base of the House of Cards. And the House of Cards is built upon the testimony from CrowdStrike, which is a very, very friendly Google Clinton organization. So this is just what it is. The murder itself, it could just be awful timing. It's tragic that anybody loses their lives in that kind of a situation either way. But this is something else here. And it's been controlled and protected from the get-go. And that's why when Mueller comes out and he asserts that it was Russia that hacked the DNC, and then Barr comes out with his letter and kind of goes along with it, I say, well, that is concerning. But then, you know, when all this other stuff goes on with Assange and stuff, I say to myself, well, it's very obvious that they needed to keep Assange and they needed to keep this entire investigation squeaky clean from anything that even sniffs like obstruction, even though the Bolsheviks out there are going to find obstruction in anything. They think that First Amendment, the Trump just voicing his displeasure with the fact that he's being investigated is obstruction. So they're never going to be pleased one way or another. But when it comes down to both Barr and Mueller agreeing that Russia hacked the DNC, that could just be like Democrats and Rand Paul voting against a spending bill. Paul thinks, you know, they shouldn't spend at all. And the other ones think that they should spend more. Maybe this is just another thing to say, hey, let's just go along with the Russia thing for now, because Julian Assange is going to be in the country sooner than we know it. And then, oh my God, maybe something pops up that makes us go back to the beginning.
Or if you're going to be a, you know, kind of like an investigative person with a monocle, not in front of their microphone, but in front of their eye, maybe that was just a way to reaffirm that. You know, maybe that was a ploy. Maybe that was just to throw it out there right before Julian Assange gets indicted and comes over here, that it was Russia that hacked the election. And then, oh my goodness, look at this information we've just received. Mueller's entire report is nonsense from top to bottom. From top to bottom. All of his indictments were nonsense. I mean, you never know. We just don't know at this point. And there's plenty of time left to go. And, you know, the more Nunes goes on television, and the more he says, and the more we see, you know, Barr being obvious, like the faces of those people when he said there was spying. Like, what do these people really believe, that there was no spying? Like the Congress people that asked him, and that woman's face, like her gasping, like
Jean Shaheen.
Yeah. Yeah. Where have you been?
Well, it's not about where she's been. Jean Shaheen, they know. I would have to imagine that from the get-go, there's going to be true believers. There's going to be, hey, listen, whatever you need us to do, we will do it. And they bend the knee and they go all in on the script and whatever. You can see like Maxine Waters. She is just a wretched, you know, you want to talk about everybody, a clump of cells. That's a clump of cells right there. Okay. A fetus has more humanity than Maxine Waters. And you look at this and I say to myself, well, you know, Jean Shaheen and everybody else knows that from the get-go, this was just a really weak play, you know. But now they're trying to find a way to gravitate away from this whole Mueller thing while keeping their narrative and the suspicion somewhat intact, but also just trying to say, you know what, we're obviously not getting anywhere with this. Let's just let it let's let bygones be bygones. No.
They're losing.
No, Gene.
They're
no,
losing.
Gene.
They're losing. They're losing. Nobody's letting bygones be bygones here, and they are going to be in for a world of hurt very soon. It's coming. We're going to be very busy. Hey, listen, Frank, 49 minutes. I think we can let you go so you can get those boys in shape and get that practice running.
Well, I mean, the practice is at 3:30, and there's no way in hell that I'm going to be able to clean the bathroom between then and now. So we might as well just do the full hour.
Sounds good to me. All right, cool. So, yeah, I mean, like, you know, we're seeing all of this. Maybe we're really going to get the truth about everything for once. I mean, maybe that's going to happen for once. And I, you know, just watching these people flail about as the Attorney General of the United States does the right thing. You know, he doesn't give a crap. He doesn't need to set him up for another political appointment. He's in his 70s. He's done. He doesn't care. He was already AG once before. He has nothing to lose, literally. It was clear in his appointment hearings. And maybe he's going to do the right thing. Maybe there are some things he wish he did differently from the Iran-Contra days. You never know. You know, you never know. You just don't know.
I got to say, what I do hope is this, that for Trump's second term, I really do hope he pulls out all the stops. And he is another one who he's got nothing left, no political aspirations left after this. Came in to win the ultimate trophy, to do the job, and you know, really just leave a legacy behind in 8 years. What I'm saying is, when you have nothing left to lose and nothing else to campaign for, I really do hope that he does not compromise with the people he surrounds himself anymore, because he is still surrounded by really dubious characters that I don't like at all.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's really hard to get rid of all those people, because on one hand, you need to keep your enemies close, your enemies closer. And on the other hand, you want a really good foundation for your administration to get stuff done. And I disagree just a slight tad with you about he has nothing left to lose, because he's got his kids and they're starting to voice political aspirations, especially Don Jr. and Ivanka. And like I've said a gazillion times, and I know you agree with me on this, I don't want another Trump in the Oval Office after this. There is no room in the United States of America for a dynasty. And if a couple of years, if, you know, 8 years goes by and like the time is right and they have good ideas and they feel, you know what I mean? But to run a succession like that, if that's what the aspiration is, it's just not something that I feel comfortable with.
Yeah, if Don Jr. wants to, you know what Don Jr. should do? I mean, most of his time and most of his business interests are in New York. I just leave the country. Everybody, leave the country alone. And if he wants to go run for state senate, if he wants to run for, I don't know what the hell it is, do something about New York. We're losing 100,000 people, 100,000 taxpayers every year that are taking their pensions and they're going to low tax states, while we are inviting more and more people who shouldn't be here and more people who are being promised that they're going to be taken care of. And we're just, New York is dying. I please stop trying to fix everything for everybody, and just, if they want to run for office and do something or start a nonprofit in New York and dedicate yourself to that. No more Trumps after this as president, please.
Yeah, I was thinking about New York because the story that just came out about them not giving free tuition to Gold Star families. And I was talking to somebody yesterday at dinner, and she was like, oh, you know, why'd you leave New York? I'm like, because it can't be saved. And I think at this point, you guys are just screwed. I don't see how you turn it around. Unless what happens with, did you see the article that was out about how New York is thinking of splitting into like little commonwealths?
Yeah, that'd be great.
I mean, really, it really would be great, because you'd leave the city to rot into its own footprint.
But, you know, I'm telling you, I would rather see New York, just like California, I would rather see New York secede.
Yeah.
I would rather see California secede than see these states be broken apart, because it's exactly what progressives want. To have them broken apart and stay in the union, as opposed to seceding from the union, is far more dangerous, because they're creating, if let's say California breaks into three pieces, like people have talked about before, the state of Jefferson, the state of North California, and the state of, you know, Southern SoCal, whatever the hell it is. What you're doing right there is you're creating four more Senate seats. You're creating, I don't know, you're creating so many, and it's still really just geographically California. They're going to find a way of taking those seats away.
Yeah.
That's why they want to turn, you know, the 15 square miles that is Washington, D.C. into a state. They know it's securely Democrat. They want the Senate seats. That's why they want to turn Puerto Rico into a state. They know it's a welfare state that will vote Democrat. Two more Senate seats. This is just what they are. They don't. So I don't like breakup movements. I would rather people, trigger articles of
secession
than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a rough process. But, you know, something's got to give here. Something's got to give. And we're just at a point where I think it's going to happen. I really do. We're there. We're just there. We just have to we have to do the right thing. We have to do the right thing, put this ship right and keep it right for once. I feel like there's these cycles of good and evil, Frank, where evil rules the day for like a certain amount of time. And then like the natural order of things needs to be reestablished. And we're kind of like moving into like that golden age of Aquarius where the natural order of things is leveling itself out again. And good is taking over. And you can't have good without truth. And you can't have good without justice. And I'm just happy that it appears as though we're getting somewhere. Because quickly before we go, just some strategy. If a Michelle Obama or a Joe Biden don't step up to run for president, the field of leftist candidates right now, they're all out radicaling themselves, and the radical left that's going to vote in the primaries, that's great, fine and dandy, but they will not capture regular America, which is 60-70% of the country, if not more, and they'll lose handily. Their ideas are horrible. Nobody with the brain thinks that they're good. You know, they're going after the kids and everything, but strategically, I think they're really shooting themselves in the foot, which is why Obama stood up and said that the other day, like, stop trying to outdo each other, stop trying to put these purity tests on each other, trying to give them like advice. But I really think if they keep this up and we don't get a centrist or someone with extremely ridiculous popularity, that there's no way that they could possibly win the re-election.
Oh yeah, the thing that is really killing them here is that Donald Trump is out and open and very he is what he is, and it's all right there in front of you. And he speaks very bluntly. You may or may not like his ideas, but what you see is what you get. And what happened with that is because he's not afraid and he's not playing the political correctness game that was keeping Republicans down, or people who identify as Republicans or conservatives down, for a long time. Ever since George Bush started coining the phrase compassionate conservatism, it was over. And then you have over as far as the willingness to fight back. But the other thing they have there is Barack Obama was very good at getting up in front of a microphone, saying things, you know, just saying words, speaking words for 45 minutes that didn't necessarily mean anything. But they're idealistic and they're very nice. And he's dressed so well, and he's got nice cadence to his voice when he's reading off a teleprompter. Then he's a stuttering mess otherwise. But he's got this nice voice, and his very silk smooth seller of lies. And what you get is he went from that, where he says things that make you think, well, I guess, you know, that's common sense. We should all be decent to each other and we should find blah, 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 blah. And then you look at the legislation that's put out there, and it's not necessarily that he's coming out and saying this is a Green New Deal. He's coming out and saying certain things that'll make you feel good about yourself. You can keep your doctor. You can do that. We're reducing costs. And all of the devil is in the details. And you only start realizing what it really was after the fact. Now that Donald Trump is such out and open person, and you can see him plain as day, what he is and what he's selling, the Democrats think that, we need to actually form a stark contrast to what he is, so they're actually telling the truth about what they want to do. The truth is ugly.
It's bad.
The truth is ugly. That truth used to be buried in the details that somebody like Obama used to sell people, and now they have no choice but to tell the truth about themselves, and it is ugly.
It is ugly. It is. Listen to this real quick.
Have you ever heard the other one?
What other one?
There's another one I think you're going to love even more.
Is it
No. No, they use the – it's the – hold on. Can I play things on my computer too?
No, that was from my phone. So if you just tell me what it is, we'll definitely play it.
Shite. Hold on a second.
Take your time. Take your time finding this fun clip.
Well, then, you know what? Pause it for a second.
No. It's okay. I can say something while you're looking for it. You know what? What killed me on the other show the other day, where I found that beautiful royalty-free violin music, our outro music came up after it or on top of it.
That wasn't royalty. That was royalty free. Yeah, I thought that was Schindler's List.
No. It was royalty free.
Oh.
Yeah. And I found it. Okay, what is it called?
I can play it over my phone if you want.
Oh yeah, do that. Yeah.
All right. This is by Place Boeing. Okay. This is a good one. They put this out in June 29th, 2016. It's called If, the Stuttering Obama Remix featuring Trump. Listen to this. And Trump comes in.
Oh yeah.
So there you go. And when he says okie doke, what the hell is okie doke?
That's some okie doke.
I see. You know, it just, that's what I'm talking about. It's all sock puppetry. It's like you got somebody up there who is always, they're always addressing crowds as if they are kindergarten teachers speaking through sock puppets. Like, this will, you know, oh, come on, okie doke. You're like, oh, come on. Just stop talking to me.
Guys.
That's it for me, too.
Yeah.
I got to go.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, thank you, Tracy. And everybody, I hope you have all a great weekend. And Tracy, we'll do this again on Monday.
Yeah, we will. Awesome stuff.
All right. Later.
Later. Thanks, guys, for listening to the Dark to Light podcast with Summer Breeze, Val, and
Summer Breeze.
You can hear us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with personalities like TV chef Brian Duffy, radio personalities like Ian Beckles and DJ Eakin, news and political pundits like Law and Crime Network's Vincent Hill, and independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.